Welcome and thank you for being with us.
Thank you. It's lovely being here.
So in a minute, we're going to talk about your film, Lieri Notes. We know that you've just brought the film to the Austin Film Festival and are also doing some Bay Area showings, including the Pakistani Cultural Film Festival. Can you talk a little bit about your own journey that led you to making this film? Let's start there.
My journey with this film began with an email from Miriam Chandy Menachery, who's my co-director and co-producer. She's based in Mumbai in India, and I'm based in Karachi in Pakistan. And she wanted to pursue this idea, and she asked if I'd be interested in collaborating with her. And her idea was to explore underground musicians in Pakistan, their popularity across the border, and how music is a source for dialogue between two countries where at the state level it seems to be failing. That's the genesis of this film.
And if you can give us even kind of a bird's eye view in a little bit, if you had to kind of give a synopsis of what viewers could expect from watching the film without necessarily giving away the whole thing, that would be awesome.
The idea was to explore musicians that are engaging with events at the social level, are making social commentary, and are also popular across borders. So in a sense, music that's engaged, music that transcends boundaries, and music also as a form of resistance, and music also as a form of expressions, and music and youth, I guess. It's a film with very young protagonists. In a sense, it gives you an idea of what you might expect in the future if young people are engaged in this way, while older people seem to not be so successful. So the film is following this musician, Hamza Jafri, who has a band called Kavan that's quite popular in the underground music scene in India and Pakistan. And not only is he a musician, he's also an educator. He has opened two music schools, one in Lahore and one in Karachi. There's not very much music education in Pakistan. So they would expect to see him and some of his motivation and journey. As well as the film follows four young girls from a district of Karachi called Lyari, which is often in the news for being inaccessible or troubled because of violence. But there's other sides of the district that one doesn't get to know. But of course, any place with people living in it is much more than just what makes the news. Sort of like Pakistan. Pakistan tends to make the news for some reasons, but there's a lot more to Pakistan.
Sure. And if we wanted to make it really accessible to our listeners, people around the world are hearing about negative things associated with our very own Oakland, right? We hear about crime rates and things like this, but yet there's this really rich artistic cultural component to the city. So what is kind of the untold story of Lieri that we don't hear about? We hear more about the violence and the poverty and the struggle. So what would be some of the undertones that people don't necessarily get to hear about as much?
Lieri is very densely populated. It's culturally very diverse. It's primarily, yes, underprivileged working class families. But historically, it's one of the oldest parts of Karachi. So Karachi is a fairly new city post-partition when Pakistan became independent. Some of the best sportsmen come from there, and there's a lot of natural talent, which is untapped also because of it being an underprivileged area.
So one of the things we talked about earlier, you focused on a school. It was a co-ed school, but in the end, in the direction you decided to go was to focus on four young girls. And one of the things that becomes really clear to viewers of the film is that these four girls, as they're studying music, they're breaking through many cultural boundaries and maybe realizing new possibilities. So talk about that.
The children from Lyari that were attending MAD school, MAD stands for Music, Art and Dance. That's the school that Hamza runs with his wife, Neda Bhatt. The Music, Art and Dance school was running a scholarship program for children from Lyari through the help of a foundation that works with children in Lyari called the Kiran Foundation. Kiran Foundation works with both girls and boys, and when they approached MAD school to run a program for music program for their children, they had to convince parents to send their children to the program. And initially, a very small number agreed because they were kind of hesitant with the idea of the children going somewhere and learning music and what it could mean. So eventually, out of 12 children went, and they went for about a year and a half, from whom four girls continued on to a final performance with a larger group. So it ended up being about these four girls that we followed, and we discovered through them some of the barriers that they have to cross, the obstacles that they might be in their personal lives in order to pursue music, education, in order to perform, which would be from within their community, within their family, but they're able to do this because they have the support of their parents.
And what were some of the barriers, to just name a few?
Some people might say that it's not permitted in religion for children to learn music. Some people might say it's inappropriate for girls to go out and learn. I mean, their fears, will they become singers? Will they become public performers? And that's not right. So all kinds of arguments such as that had to be countered.
And talking about your own journey, so you have lived in Pakistan for most of your entire life.
Yes, that's correct.
And you are a filmmaker there. So what's it like to sustain yourself as a filmmaker in Pakistan? What's kind of your story that led you in this direction? And what's it like to continue sustaining yourself in this way?
Surprisingly, there are quite a few women in the media in Pakistan. And I've also taught filmmaking at university level in Karachi. And the majority of my students were women. So it's a misconception that it's a man's world, this industry. I think people also might be surprised that there have been quite a few women working in film and television in Pakistan. And personally, as a documentary filmmaker, I find because people are generally, communities are generally conservative, they might be more wary of someone, an outside male, coming into a home and asking questions and filming. But with women, it's easier to access, at least other women. So I found it to be an advantage. People sort of look out for you. People, there's a lot of respect.
Earlier, you talked about really considering it to be a privilege as a documentary filmmaker. People let you into their lives. They let you kind of get a bird's eye view of what they're going through. So what is it in your own life that led you in this direction? How did you know that you wanted to become a filmmaker and then to focus on this genre?
I'd have to say that I've been discovering documentaries as I've evolved as a filmmaker. I came to the US to study. I did my bachelor's here in journalism and mass communication. I came as an open major. I didn't know what I wanted to do. And about a year and a half into my education, I'd taken an intro to film class and I realized, hey, this was something I could pursue because it combined so many things I was interested in to make something entirely new. It combined writing, photography, music. So I became very interested in film, but I then also decided pretty soon that I didn't want to just study filmmaking and pursue a master's. I wanted to just dive into it as soon as I graduated. So I got a bachelor's in journalism and mass communication, and I went back and started working, thinking perhaps I'll do more fiction. But as I started working, I did do some commissioned documentaries and I started discovering documentary as a genre and also started realizing that nonfiction and creative nonfiction and documentary itself is also a subjective medium. So both fiction and nonfiction, the best of fiction and nonfiction attempt to convey truths, you know, that perhaps the audience can relate to and that the filmmaker is trying to convey. And I feel that I'm still learning documentary.
Did you encounter parental resistance when you said, hey, I'm going to become a filmmaker, that's what I'm going to do with my life? Were your parents on board with that?
Perhaps, like most parents, they were concerned, how will you survive? You know? But nevertheless, I think I was very fortunate because my father was a great believer in that. If your heart is in it, then at least you have a chance to excel. That's what made him say, all right.
What was the most challenging part about making this film?
I think the challenges would be the nuts and bolts. Yeah, the film was a creative collaboration between two people in different countries with a hostile border. Initially, we thought that maybe Miriam will come to Pakistan for some of the filming and I might go to India for some of the editing, but that didn't transpire. We agreed then I would film it and I would send the footage to her and she would edit it. But of course, we were raising money for it as we went along. So we had deadlines, and because of the relations between Pakistan and India, I could ship hard drives out of Pakistan to her. I had to wait for people who would be traveling abroad, who would be willing to carry the hard drive with the material for me, and then mail it to her in time for her to be able to go through the rushes and edit them.
Talk about that really briefly, a little about not being able to ship a hard drive.
I couldn't mail hard drives out of Pakistan. It's not allowed. And definitely not to India, for sure. I mean, that would also raise eyebrows. So I had to find people who'd be willing to carry the hard drives. I mean, video is, we're shooting 4K, so it ends up being quite many gigabytes of material. You can't just transfer it online. So I had to wait for friends who might be traveling to Dubai or to the US or wherever who would be willing to, who trusted me enough to know I wasn't partaking in any espionage. I was actually trying to send some material across to make a documentary, which was a story we wanted to tell about a soft side of Pakistan. So these human mules were found and used. Well, we got lucky. We were able to do it, but it was always tense because we also were working with deadlines for trailers and edits to be shared with potential funders in order for us to have the money to be able to make this.
What was something that you noticed about yourself that changed, or like, how did you see yourself grow as a filmmaker and as a human being, like, while you were making this?
I had to learn a lot of patience and sort of trust the process, because it's a long undertaking where you also require people who don't owe you anything to allow you to continue to be in their lives so you can tell a story.
When you were creating this film, like, what brought you the most joy from filming?
Oh, when I had the camera pointed in the right direction and the mic on and managed to record a nugget that I felt, oh, this I'm sure is going to go in the film. That's always joyous, because your worst fear as a filmmaker is that, you know, it's not, you're not directing action, it's happening. You have to be there to catch it. So your worst fear is that you'll miss something, or you'll be there and something will be said, or something will happen and your camera won't be rolling. And of course, you can't make anyone do it again. And even if you ask them to say it again, it's not going to be the same.
And a few of the nuggets that really stuck out to me, there's a moment where this children are talking about this act of violence that happened in the country, and this was a 2014 incident that happened, taking the lives of more than 100 children. Can you talk about what the incident was and kind of what impact that had on children in the country, children in the film, and the country as a whole?
So the incident was an attack on an army public school in Peshawar in Pakistan, where militants stormed and attacked a school and killed about 135 children. This happened perhaps because the Pakistan is a victim of terrorism itself. Because the army has been going after the terrorist strongholds, there's backlash. This was the first time in the country that a school was targeted and children were targeted, and it shook the nation. I remember it was incredibly depressing. The atmosphere was thick with depression in the country. Everyone was shaken by it, and as a result, over time, schools have had to beef up their security. You can't really prevent children from knowing what's happening on the news. You know, every house has people have television sets, people talk. So it has entered the consciousness of children that somehow something horrible can happen even to them in their school. It's possible. It was towards the ending of our filming that the Army Public School in Peshawar was attacked, and we were able to follow the children to a vigil and interview them and their families as they themselves processed the news and tried to come to terms with it and also develop a strategy for dealing with it, I mean, as they were learning to deal with it.
And there's a very sweet moment where this little girl is saying, well, whoever did that, they could not have been Muslim, because I mean, my religion would never allow for something like that to happen. I think that moment is so sweet and so innocent. Looking at the world through the eyes of children, I feel like you can never go wrong. But interestingly, right now, looking at the world through the eyes of children, which I think is always amazing because they have such unique things to say and also such honesty, our country, you might know, has been dealing with a lot of Islamophobia for a long time, but it's really at a heightened amount during the campaigns on the GOP Republican side. With Donald Trump being a front runner, it's become mainstream and normalized. And so what would you hope that maybe the general public might be able to take away from this movie in terms of Islamophobia, especially since Pakistan is sometimes at the receiving end of a lot of the Islamophobic rhetoric?
From this film, they'll see that what they might perceive to be extremism and violent Islam, what they might equate with religion, they'll find that Muslims themselves don't equate with as their religion, and they themselves disassociate themselves with extremism and violent expressions. They might realize that we are one world, we are in this together, and the more we divide ourselves, the more we put ourselves at a disadvantage, and the more we are able to see past the differences and realize that it's a common threat. At the root of this threat is to label someone the other.
So we've touched on a lot of things. We've touched on the power of music to build a bridge between countries through children as kind of a carrier of a message of peace, girls in particular. What would be the main thing that you hope the international audience would take away from this film as they watch?
I've been surprised sitting in audiences and people are laughing where I at the funny moments, getting all the jokes, getting all the nuances. So that's very hopeful for me. That means we are able to read each other. We're able to recognize each other. And that's what I continue to hope for with this film. The film has just started its festival run. It did air on Al Jazeera, so it was seen internationally on television, at least a 50-minute version of it. It's a 70-minute film. In the festival so far, it's been to Amsterdam, it's been to Mumbai, and it's come to the U.S. So far, touch wood, all good. but I'm not afraid of meeting someone who might not agree with the film or have or not get it or want, as long as we can speak. I think that's what's important. As long as we can, they bring it up and we talk about it and we can come to some understanding or even agree to disagree.
So thinking about your journey thus far as a filmmaker, as a woman, it sounds like you've done some big projects over the years. What would you say is the most important lesson you've learned on your journey, and how did you learn that?
I think don't take anything for granted. The technology is the easy thing to learn, but how you engage with people, how you engage with stories, and how you bring them to the screen, it's a very subjective process, but it's very important to keep asking yourself what your motivations are for what you filmed and how you're presenting it, and whether it corresponds to what you understand to be true. So that's a process of refinement. I think it's important as a filmmaker to keep that open. And I think in that process, you might learn things about yourself.
And this is an abstract question, but I'm working on a bigger project called The Rhythm of Change. So what does that mean to you, and how does that apply to your work as a woman and as a filmmaker?
We have a saying that you don't dip into the same stream twice. So change is a constant. We can't hold on to anything. We have to embrace it, and we have to be willing to submit to it. And I hope I am able to do that myself. That way, perhaps I might grow. If I resist it, I think I can create problems for myself.
Anything else that you were hoping we would have asked you that we didn't get to ask you, or anything you wanted to share with our listeners before we wrap up today?
I'm delighted because I often ask this question in my interviews as well. No, I think this has been a wonderful interview. I've really enjoyed being here.
Well, our listeners will probably want to track you down or learn more about your film. So tell us how we can find out more about you or find out more about this film.
There's a website, learinotes.com. We spell it LYARINOTES.com. And Miriam and I are planning an outreach strategy where we take the film into workshops, into settings where we can use it as a tool to talk about the importance of arts education, because the arts education is often not taken seriously, especially in our countries where there's such stress on doing well academically and getting so many A's and being in the top percentile. That puts pressure on students to study really hard, but we feel that a very important part of their growth and development is missing, which comes out if they're able to pursue also arts in their education. So we want to do that with this film as well. So we don't have a website for that yet. We probably will in the coming months, but there will be a link to it for sure at learinotes.com. So we hope anyone who's interested in this story, in the film, save our website, a URL in their browsers, and follow our journey.
Mahin Zia, thank you so much for being with us this afternoon.
Thank you.